Cecilia, Ci Sono Anch'io by Morvith, read by Cookie Mom 6067. The porch key leaves Nikki and Joe at the boundaries of the property on the outer edges of the park. Nikki glances at Joe, meets his hard, determined eyes. He is also subtly checking that he is all right, a superfluous precaution, but he needs all the reassurance he can get right now. He needs Joe at his back, now more than ever. Whatever Joe reads on his face, he offers a nod and a smile that's a fraction of his usual grin, but infinitely precious nonetheless. Without a word, Nikki takes his hand and starts walking up the large path. He could have charmed the portkey to take them right up to the gate, but somehow it felt more proper to make their way to the house on foot. Perhaps it was just to keep Joe by his side a little longer, draw strength from his presence for as long as he can. The wards let them pass. Nikki feels the exact moment they recognize him, their magic switching from carefully probing to warm and welcoming. They thrum almost happily, as though they were glad to have him here again. Life and magic will have their little jokes. His family could never be described as warm, but the old family magic, the wards and house charms laid in layers upon layers through the centuries, never cared that he didn't live up to some exacting and imaginary standards. He was a Genovese by blood and birth, and that was enough. He shivers now, thinking of what waits for them at the end of the path, of the little girl who maybe didn't even have that. Perhaps guessing his thoughts, Joe squeezes his hand. Nikki squeezes his hand back, but his mind is a whirlwind of rage and worry. It took them 5 days to get ready, much too long, even if it's not too late yet. He knows it's not too late. His niece is still inside the house, exactly where she has been for the past 4 years, but he still wishes he could have been faster. He wishes he could have just apparated here, grabbed her, and apparated out the moment he got her letter. Back when the Genovese line began, he could have done just that, invoking his rites of blood. But these are modern times. Civilized, and his lips want to curl in a sneer, bare his teeth, though the enemy is not in sight, not yet. His magic pulses and swishes furiously beneath his skin, ready to be unleashed, almost begging to be unleashed, really. But this won't be a repeat of that game. Nikki has come too far for that, even if it would be extremely satisfying. Still, modern times mean modern measures. Beating his own family at its home pitch will be even more satisfying. There is a certain pleasure to be had in stomping out ancient bigotry with modern civilized means. Every step brings them closer to the house, to her. 5 days, and now they are almost there. Almost there. 5 days. It feels like a long time. Too long, even, as he was living through it, making fire call after fire call, researching, asking seemingly innocent questions. Other times, it feels like it was just yesterday when he sat down with the Alcizanis at breakfast, distractedly going through his mail. There had been a report from Fazioli on the last broom test, another from his accountant, a postcard from Chris from New Zealand, and last, a letter with the Genovese family crest, the variation reserved for the heir, more precisely, his brother, Gian Vittorio. He had almost thrown it away without opening it. God help him, he had almost... But he hadn't. He hadn't. Truth be told, he would have guessed it was one of the usual courtesy invitations nobody expected him to accept, though what the occasion might be baffled him. It was the wrong time for milestone birthdays and significant wedding anniversaries. Gian Vittorio's children were still much too young to marry. Perhaps a death notice, he thought, if his family had decided that his presence was no longer tolerable even at funerals. Instead, he had pulled out a blank page. He remembers Amira silently raising her eyebrows, Joe peeking over his shoulder and frowning. Is this a joke? I don't think so. He could still feel traces of the family finding spells on the envelope, though the magical signature was definitely not Gian Vittorio's. Similar, yes, definitely Genovese, but not one he knew. Perhaps his son? He was the right age to get Quidditch mad and wish to boast about a famous relative to his schoolmates. A prank, maybe? Yet the paper didn't feel blank. There was magic there, so faint as to be almost impalpable, quite different from the strong, clear marks on the envelope. Nicky had frowned, instinctively reaching out with his own magic, and then... Later, Joe told him that the paper shivered. Amira said that she saw a white glint of light. Mariam and Ibrahim, that they heard a small bell chiming. But all Nicky remembers is her voice, her words. "Dear Uncle Niccolo," it began in Italian, a young girl's voice, formal and composed, and yet there had been something in there that had him tense and reach for his magic from the first three words. "I hope you will forgive my presumption in addressing you so, family relations being what they are, although you are my father's brother, and so I am really not sure what else I could call you. I don't expect you to remember me. I'm Ippolita Cecilia, Gian Vittorio's daughter. Obviously, I mean..." A flash of memory. The thick cream cardboard of the invitation to her christening, her name flashing in silver ink. He had sent a suitably expensive present. He must have. It's what was expected of him. But there had been so many christenings he had never attended, so many children he had never even met. He couldn't remember what he picked for her. "Sorry, that was stupid. Of course you know who he is. Sorry." The first overt crack in her voice. She sounded so small. "We actually met once at Great Aunt Lucilla's funeral. I was making a spectacle of myself, and you took me flying. It was very kind of you." Another flash. A little girl with bright red curls, sobbing, and a frazzled nanny. He remembered the flight, too. Aunt Lucilla's house growing smaller and smaller, and a delighted little voice urging him to go faster, higher. "You must be wondering why I am writing to you." Somehow he did not think it was about Quidditch. I am not sure how much you know, how much you've heard. Eugenio told me that you never come to family functions, so maybe you don't know. But neither do I. Go to family functions, I mean, not for about 5 years now. Mother and father say that I am too delicate, but I'm never ill. I didn't even catch the dragon pox when Eugenio got it. If my health was so bad, I should be seeing a medi-wizard, but I'm not. The last time was 4 years ago, before they pulled me out of school. They said it was my health, but I think it's because I wasn't doing well. I have had private tutors since then, only they don't seem to be helping much. They don't seem to be helping at all, if I'm honest. A pause. The hitch of a breath. Uncle Niccolo, I don't think I'm magical. Not enough to matter, at least. Not enough for a Genovese, she meant, and the implications were enough to make Nicky's blood run cold. I don't know what's going to happen to me. Eugenio has been pestering mother and father to send me to school with him, but they always shush him and tell him I'm too delicate. He heard them talking about a place in Switzerland, but we checked and it's not a school. It's a hospital. But I'm not ill, Uncle. I'm really not. There is nothing wrong with me. I mean, of course there is if I'm not. If I am. But I don't want to live in a hospital. What could they even do? It's not like they can cure me. She wasn't yelling, not quite, but her voice had grown louder, more shrill, more terrified. One of my schoolmates had a squib cousin, And she said he went to a muggle school and was going to study to get a muggle job. I could do it too. I could change my name, and nobody would know I'm a Genovese. Father said you were always busy with charity brats, so maybe you knew a place I could go. Muggles must have boarding schools, even ones where I'd never need to come home. I would miss Eugenio, but it would be just like if I had gone to the hospital, no? Joe had leaned against him then, wrapping an arm around Nicky's stiff shoulders. Some of the Alcazani cousins could understand Italian and were glancing in their direction, frowning. I know you and Father don't get along, but you don't have to talk to him if you don't want to. You could write him a list of places. I promise I'll go. I'll be good. I won't give you any trouble. Her voice started cracking again. The first sob she had been desperately trying to swallow back down could no longer be contained. I'll never bother you again. Any of you, I promise. Please, Uncle, please help me. I don't know who else to ask. The voice had faded. Perhaps she had been too upset to manage a final stilted greeting. Perhaps she had choked through it, and the spells on the paper hadn't been enough to sustain it without the feedback from her own magic. The Alcazani dining room had exploded into noise, the youngest children asking who that girl was and why she was crying, the adults running the gamut from loud exclamations of sadness or shock to swearing in a variety of languages and volumes, to condemnations, to offers of aid or shouted ideas. It reminded Niccolo of certain winter storms, the thunder and lightning over dark waves. He remembers standing, still holding the letter as his other hand searched and found Joe's own, clasping it tightly like a lifeline, and turning towards the head of the table. Baba Ibrahim, he had said softly, his voice somehow even. I need to borrow a fireplace. Of course, my son, Ibrahim had immediately replied. You can use my study for as long as you need. Nicky had bowed his head, thanked him, and excused himself and Joe to the room at large before stepping away from the table, Joe immediately falling into step next to him without letting go of his hand. Some day, Nicky is sure, Joe will tease him about his beautiful, impeccable, silver spoon born and bred manners, even in the face of a crisis. Someday. That's all he remembers until they reached Ibrahim's study. Joe's hand, and the door closing, and the gritty fistful of flu powder as he looked at the love of his life. We talked about children someday, he whispered. But it wasn't like this. If Joe hadn't let him go any further, his eyes flashing with rage and sorrow. That little girl needs us, Nicky. A deep breath, his arms crossed over his chest. If you are planning to leave her to her fate, you are not the man I married. Make that call. So he had, the first of many. They had talked more in between fire calls and in their bed late at night about what they were going to do and how they were going to do it, how things would change. Thank God and all the stars that shone in the hour of Nicky's birth for Joe. He would have never made it this far without him. It seems profoundly unfair that now he must go on without him. Their walk has come to an end. They have reached their destination. Before them stand the iron gate shaped like intertwined rose branches on which two large golden griffins perch, standing guard, the high wall and the stronger, harsher wards that mark the innermost limits of the property, the oldest grounds. For all that his family despises him, they have never formally disowned him, which means he still has certain rights to the family homes, unless Gian Vittorio or his father specifically barred him. He can come and go as he pleases, especially at Air House, where he spent the greater part of his childhood. Unfortunately, his rights do not extend to inviting his own guests now that he is no longer in residence. Whatever awaits him in that house, he has to face it by himself. Perhaps it's better this way. He has almost lost Joe twice now, and they do say that third time's the charm. Joe's grip on his hand tightens, A soft sigh escapes his lips. I hate that I have to let you go in there alone. Nikki strokes his thumb over his knuckles. I know, Jill, but I need you out here to watch my back. Quite the role reversal, isn't it? He leans forward, squinting at Nikki's left arm as if trying to see through his robes. You still have the bracelet, don't you? He would accept a simple yes, but Nikki still raises his arm and lets the sleeve slip backwards, the old silver glinting in the receding light. Joe still reaches out with his right hand, briefly exposing his own identical one, and strokes his fingers over the complex magical symbols skillfully hidden among the geometric pattern. Perhaps the bracelet reacts to the closeness of its twin, perhaps to Joe's magic or Miriam's blood that flows in his veins. The bracelets did come from her family, after all, and the magic feels so close to hers. There's no light, no soft glow, not even a chime or a jingle. Then Nikki feels warm right down to his bones. It's like coming in from training in the freezing rain and standing in front of a fire, a hot mug of tea in his hands. He can even taste it, mint and honey on his tongue. He turns his hand, easily capturing Joe's and raising it to his lips, pressing a kiss against his knuckles. You will be able to see and hear everything I do, Hayati. Most important of all, it will be admissible in court. But I won't be able to help. There's no masking the bitterness in Joe's voice for all that he tries as he pulls his hand back. Nikki won't relinquish his hold so easily. You already have. He kisses his knuckles again, then the palm of his hand, his wrist right below the bracelet. If it goes badly, I trust you to get us out. Joe closes his eyes, takes a deep breath, and holds it for a second. When he opens his eyes again, there's nothing but fierce determination on his face. Nikki's heart skips a beat as he nods slowly, solemn as an unbreakable vow. All right. His smile flashes, irrepressible as always. I'll follow the game plan. Nikki has never loved him more. He isn't a cruel man, at least he doesn't think so, but he knows how much he is asking of Joe, how hard it will be for him to stand and watch and wait. Just so we are clear, the plan is to get our lawyers and the vigil, not storm the house with the entire Alkazani clan. The reminder is enough to startle a rueful laugh out of Joe. So if it's just me, Andy, Booker, and the rest of the guard... Nikki thinks he manages a good approximation of his infamous glares. No. Joe raises both hands placatingly. All right, just the plan. Nikki nods. I shan't be long. Before he can turn towards the gate, Joe grabs his shoulders and closes the distance between them, seeker quick, pulling Nikki close until they are breathing the same air, their foreheads pressed together. Come back to me. Always. He seals his promise with a kiss, a brief, light one. There will be time for more later. Niccolo turns, walks up to the gates, and places his hand on the right side of the Genovese coat of arms. The metal remains cool under his touch, even as the wards surge to meet him. Again, the feel of the family magic changes as it recognizes him, though its warmth can't really compare to all the blessings and incantations that have been bestowed upon him in the last 12 hours. It's undeniably real, but distant, impersonal, with no human thought or heart to guide it. Niccolo welcomes it anyway. One light push is all it takes, and the gate swings open silently, no sound of a lock turning, for magical gates need no locks, no creaking hinges to even hint at untidiness. The end effect is impressive, if eerie, and perhaps a bit vulgar, too, considering the amount of magic that must go into arranging all that. Yet Niccolo gets the distinct impression that the gate is preening, griffins and all. As he passes through, he lets go of a breath he hadn't realized he was holding. For all that Joe worries about what was waiting for him at the house, this was always going to be the most difficult part, the one thing that could have ruined the whole plan. Up to this very moment, Nikki wasn't completely sure he'd be able to get in. Magically disowning someone takes time, blood, and effort, and it's all too public, while revoking his access to their houses would have been much quicker and more private. Understandable, really, after his very dangerous, very public loss of control. However, that would have required his father and Gian Vittorio to actually think about Nicky of their own volition, and for longer than a second. Nicky would sooner lay all his money on Joe's 2-year-old cousin Majid producing a working philosopher's stone from his finger paints. As the gates swing noiselessly shut behind him, Nicky sets up the path that sweeps towards the house in a large circle, bracketing the finely manicured lawn and flower beds. A thin layer of gravel crunches under his feet. His family kept horses until his grandfather's time. Afterwards, it was just a reminder of when the family used to ride out and survey their lands without frightening their Muggle dependents. Nicky isn't surprised it hasn't changed, just like he isn't surprised that Air House itself has. The biggest, most obvious difference is the overstuccoed fake Baroque facade that replaced the lovely Art Deco one he remembers from his childhood. But it's not just that. The lawn at the back, the one that used to be a vast expanse of soft grass, perfect for flying laps and throwing quaffles and bludgers, has been overtaken by a huge fountain holding several vapid-looking nymphs, large trees too tall to have grown naturally, and topiary bushes take up the rest of the space. Still perfect for garden parties. Utterly awful as a flying area. He cannot say it doesn't hurt, but it's a small paltry thing, barely the prickle of a thorn. Coming back is not as he imagined it would be. He thought it would be harder, more painful, that memories would drag his every step like chains, and they are still there, they're just memories. That old, dementor-like bleakness he expected to envelop him doesn't come. The wounds in his heart no longer bleed, long since scarred over. At worst, they give the odd twinge. But it's not the crushing pain he used to live with, like carrying an invisible boulder around wherever he went. He should be shaking like a leaf at the thought of defying the family so much. He should be breaking in cold sweat and doubting and second-guessing. Yet he feels perfectly tranquil. He's not sure where this courage comes from, if it's the bracelet Mariam slipped on his wrist, the pepper spray Booker and Niall insisted on, or the bone amulet Andromache swore would block any and all memory charms and wouldn't explain where it came from. Maybe it's Joe waiting outside, or Ibrahim, Mariam, Aisha, Amira, and Zara in Tunis, Chris and Caitlin in London, Domenico and Elisa, old Cos Matola. He has a family now. He will not let his relatives take it from him, whether they like it or not. Tonight his family will grow. Perhaps Air House isn't the only thing that has changed. Nicky saunters through the front door and turns left into the receiving parlor, carelessly letting both doors slam behind him. A bit petty of him, since the wards must have already warned the current masters of Air House of his presence. But sometimes, one's displeasure is best expressed through... What were the words? Oh, yes. Unseemly displays of temper. Nicky unhurriedly takes in the decor. The new wallpaper with pink roses on sage-green background looks very nice, if feminine. It must be Clotilde's touch, as he heads for the liquor cabinet. Gian Vittorio bursts in with his wand drawn as Nicky pours himself a glass of cognac, stopping in his tracks so suddenly Clotilde slams against his back. Niccolo? He goggles at him in disbelief. Evening, Gian V. Clotilde. Nicky nods at them and puts the bottle back exactly where he found it. Gian Vittorio keeps gawking. Good for him, mother cannot see him now. Clotilde surprisingly recovers first and takes refuge in her manners. Good evening, she stammers, trying to paste a smile on her face. Such an unexpected surprise. What are you doing here? Gian Vittorio finally explodes, striding forward to put himself between Niccolo and Clotilde, his wand raised and ready. How did you get in? Nicky raises an eyebrow at him. Through the front door? Obviously, he pretends to take a sip. I am one of the Genovese heirs. Have you forgotten? This is my house, too. Gian Vittorio traces a quick serpentine figure with his wand, reaching for the wards, and Nicky pretends to drink again as he waits. There's a movement by the door behind him and Clotilde, a flash of reddish-brown hair over a small face sneaking a peek around the doorframe, and a magical signature that feels close to Gian Vittorio's, yet different. A magical signature Nicky has felt quite recently. So this is his nephew, Eugenio, and now Nicky knows exactly who performed the tracking spells on the letter. A grimace on his brother's face announces that his words are confirmed, and Nicky speaks up before Gian Vittorio can. I am here on family business. The documents appear on the coffee table, conjured out of thin air without a wand and without a gesture. Clotilde can't quite suppress a shudder. You and Clotilde need to sign those. Gian Vittorio frowns, holsters his wand, and snatches the papers from the table, glaring at his wife when she lets out a strangled gasp. Sign what? What sort of trouble did you get yourselves? He trails off as his eyes move over the words on the page, his face flushing with anger. Preposterous! You cannot be serious! What is it, Jean V? Clotilde asks timidly, moving closer and trying to peer over his shoulder. I am completely serious. Nicky swirls the cognac in his glass. It is in your best interest to sign it. The flush on Gian Vittorio's face deepens. Nicky will have to ask Joe about that exact shade of purple later. I don't know what sort of game. The glass stops. You think this is a game? He asks softly, with no hint of pleasantness. Your daughter is a squib. Clotilde takes a step backwards and covers her mouth with her hands, though not fast enough to muffle a shrill squeak. How dare you slander her like that? Gian Vittorio growls, flinging the papers back on the table. Oh, quit it, Jean V, I know everything. Nicky slams his glass down on the closest decorative table. Was the Swiss clinic your own idea, or was it our parents'? Something flickers in his eyes. Ah, you didn't have the balls to tell them, did you? They would have disowned us, Clotilde wails. Disowned my poor Eugenio. Hush, Clo. This is none of his business, Gian Vittorio hisses through clenched teeth. But it is, Nicky replies. She is a Genovese, and as her only paternal uncle, I am by law, blood, and custom, her closest relative. Our parents won't sue for her custody, not once they know the truth, and I bet neither will Clotilde's parents or her brother. Both his brother and his sister-in-law wince. Nicky shrugs. This really doesn't change things much for you. After all, you were perfectly willing to sign her over to the clinic. Listen here! This time, though, Gian Vittorio gets interrupted by his own wife, who startles and cries, Eugenio, what are you doing here? The boy gives up on hiding and stands in the doorway, shifting his weight from foot to foot. He doesn't say a word, just keeps staring at Nicky with a sort of desperate hope. This is a grown-up conversation. Oh, dear, were you eavesdropping? Where did you learn such rudeness? Not the moment, Clo, Gian Vittorio huffs. Eugenio, go to your room. Hi, Eugenio. Nicky talks right over him. I'm your Uncle Nicolo. I've come to fetch your sister. While you are going upstairs, could you tell her to start packing, please? Eugenio nods mutely, a look of utter relief on his face, and rushes away without acknowledging the twin cries of his name from his parents. Seconds later, Nicky can hear him thundering up the stairs, somehow managing to sound like a stampede of elephants, even without a duplicating charm, like all teenage boys everywhere. Clotilde drops into the closest armchair and hides her face in her hands again as Gian Vittorio rounds on him. This is my family! How dare... If you care about your daughter, pick up those papers and signed them. You are not allowed to judge me, Gian Vittorio shouts, clenching his fists. Not you. What do you even know about family? You selfish asshole. You only ever think about yourself. What do you know of parenting? Clotilda and I tried everything. We consulted doctors, hired tutors. Magic tutors, Nikki corrects him scathingly. Not one of them taught her anything useful, like muggle geography, or history, or science, or anything at all about the world she is supposed to live in. We spent thousands of Ducati, Clotilda protests. Muggle school is free, and you had options. The Squibs Protection Act of 1706, does that ring a bell? He sneers. Did you think money could buy magic? He almost pities his sister-in-law. Knowing his parents, especially his mother, he knows exactly where the blame for producing a squib child will fall, and it won't be on the Genovese golden child. Only almost, though. We only want what's best for her, Gian Vittorio insists. If you think you can just waltz in and take her because you and your boyfriend want to play family. Husband, actually, do try to be precise, and I told you, I am not playing. He squares up to Gian Vittorio, his magic swirling all around him, ready and waiting. This is how it is going to be. You both will sign the documents. I will take full custody and guardianship of Ippolita Cecilia. Or what? Gian Vittorio sticks his chin out. You'll huff and puff and bring the house down. Nikki smiles, entirely without humor. Great choice of words there, though he doubts Gian Vittorio will appreciate it. Or I will go to the press. Gian Vittorio recoils as if confronted by a grim. You can't! It would be a scandal! Clotilda makes no sound, just collapses backwards in her seat, her face deathly pale. I am not new to scandals, Nikki shrugs, skillfully hiding months, years of anxiety and utter torment behind the careless gesture. Though I expect this one will put all of mine to shame. The public outcry alone, and then the ministry investigation. Because there will be a ministry investigation. You broke the law. Several laws, in fact. He picks up his glass again, almost the mockery of a toast. And you won't be able to bribe or bully your way out of trouble. The public will want answers. There hasn't been a case of willful infringement of the Squibs Protection Act since 1884. Did you know that? Mother and father will never forgive you, Gian Vittorio snarls. Nikki comes dangerously close to snarling back that he is the one who won't forgive their parents and Gian Vittorio, but holds himself in check. No cracks, no footholds, nothing for them to work with. Instead, he raises both eyebrows at Gian Vittorio. Are you threatening me with that? Really? What are you, 5? Andromache's amulet suddenly grows hot against his skin. A yellow-green light shines out of the corner of his eye, and just as his magic rises to meet it, the memory charm slams against an invisible shield and explodes in a rain of sparkles. Gian Vittorio stumbles backwards and falls with a startled gasp. Clotilda cries out in pain, her wand clattering on the floor. Before any of them can move or summon an air house intervenes, the wand bursts into white-hot flames as the entire house rumbles and quivers. The shadows all around the room grow longer, deeper, and Clotilda presses herself into the armchair with a terrified whimper, trying to make herself as small as possible. Just as abruptly as it started, the fire burns out, leaving behind only a pile of ashes. But the noise does not stop. Nikki adds to the implied threat by letting his magic go, letting it climb higher and higher. I strongly suggest you don't try again. The house will not be so forgiving next time. By some miracle, his voice doesn't shake. His hands do, if ever so slightly. He curls one into a fist and slips the other into his pocket with feigned nonchalance, gripping the can of pepper spray tightly. Shall we add attempted assault and unlawful use of a memory charm to your long list of charges? It's your word against ours, Gianvittorio grunts from the floor, struggling to calm the house down. Nicky shakes his head. Gianvi, how stupid do you think I am? I didn't come here unprepared. Ever heard of remote pensives? Nicky only has, because of Joe's cousins in the diplomatic service, but there's no need to share it. Gianvittorio gapes, almost losing control of the house again. Those are expensive and rare. You couldn't possibly. I am a Quidditch star. Many people like Quidditch. It's nothing but the truth. Nicky didn't try to see whether his influence could extend that far, but if Gianvittorio believes that, it will keep Joe safe, and that's all that matters. Nicky can't quite believe he has influence, usually loath to use his fame. This time he had no qualms about reaching out to any possible contact, from old Little League teammates to their parents, from former schoolmates to teachers and tutors. Even Magdalena from the Turin Fashion House, where he gets his suits, got pulled in. So many people were willing to answer his questions, give him their time, their expertise and information, without even asking what he needed them for. He fully understands now what Joe and Calda meant with star power. He's very grateful his family took against Quidditch and didn't realize they could have used him and his chosen career as well. Remembering how desperate he used to be for their love and approval, he can see how easily they could have made him into their puppet. Now, though, is neither the time nor place to indulge in morbid what-ifs. As Gianvittorio carefully climbs to his feet, air houses displeasure mostly quieted, Nicky makes a show of looking at his watch. I don't have all night. Last chance for us to leave quietly and be out of your hair. Without unpleasant fuss. Gianvittorio clenches and unclenches his fists, glaring at him, his own magic gathered tightly around him. Then suddenly his shoulders slump. One gesture of his hand sees the papers gathered back in good order on the table and two quills and an inkpot summoned from the study. Gianvi, we can't! Clotilda tries to protest. What? Other choice do we have, he grumbles, grabbing one of the quills. Let's get it over with. In the end, it's almost anticlimactic, even with the smoke of the burnt wand still hanging in the air and the scorch mark on the floor. The documents get signed, both magical and muggle ones, and with every signature, the house grows quieter, brighter. Niccolo double-checks each and every sheet of paper, ignoring Gianvittorio's outraged glare, and secures them. Gianvittorio turns his back on him without a word. Clotilda, who never left her armchair, sits with her back straight and her hands clenched in her lap, staring fixedly at the floor. So be it then. Niccolo walks out of the receiving parlor without a word or a backward glance, an invisible shield charm large enough to cover his entire body following behind. He does slow down as he reaches the entrance hall, wondering if he should go up to the nursery or ask Airhouse to call Eugenio down, but it turns out there's no need. Eugenio is already coming down the stairs, dragging a prodigiously heavy school trunk and following behind him. In the past 5 days, he never thought about what his niece looked like, not even once. It simply didn't matter. And now here she is, taller, definitely, her hair darker but still red, still curly, and he feels something in his chest, like a flower suddenly blooming, its roots wrapped tight around his heart. He is feeling a lot of things at once, sympathy, sadness for all that she's going through, nervousness, fear, but above all, recognition, acceptance. Oh, he thinks, and the thought strikes like a bludger, like lightning. It's you. Of course it's you. It couldn't have been anybody else. It does not come from blood. It's not magic, in the same way that the sun rising is not magic, or the first spring flowers pushing through the snow, or a butterfly bursting through its chrysalis. It simply is. The children get off the staircase, Eugenio dropping the trunk at his feet with a relieved huff. Nicky clears his throat, hopes against hope he doesn't look too intimidating. Thank you, Eugenio. Hello, Ippolita. I'm your Uncle Niccolo. I got your letter. He wants to hug her. He wants to promise her that everything will be all right, that he and Joe will never, ever leave her. But she would not believe him, not now. It might frighten her, too, and that's the last thing he wants. He clears his throat again. Have you packed everything? Ippolita nods, short and quick. Okay. Good. Do you have a cloak? The air is colder in England. She looks down, blinking quickly. Eugenio reaches out and squeezes her shoulder. She can have mine. He immediately summons a dark green cloak with gold fastenings and wraps it around her shoulders. And she prefers Cecilia, actually, he adds. Nicky blinks and turns his gaze back on her. Is that so? Cecilia swallows hard and nods, pulling her brother's cloak tighter around herself. I'm sorry I didn't know that. He holds out his hand. I'm very happy to meet you, Cecilia. Thank you for choosing to trust me and my husband. Cecilia startles, stares at his hand for a few seconds that seem eternal before hesitantly shaking it. As loath as Nicky is to hurry her, he doesn't want to linger much longer. Are you ready to go? Cecilia nods. Okay. Don't you want to say goodbye to your brother? Can I? She says, and immediately covers her mouth with her hands, her eyes wide. Of course you can. Take all the time you need. Cecilia does not need to be told twice. She turns and throws her arms around Eugenio, who hugs her back just as tightly. Nicky goes to grab the school trunk, leaving them as much privacy as he can. The door of the receiving parlor moves, and Nicky's magic rises again as Jean Vittorio appears in the doorway, though his brother makes no move to go further. He is not holding his wand, nor does he seem to be tapping into the magic of Air House. Cecilia sees him before her brother does. Her arms tighten around him one last time. Then she lets go, steps away gracefully. For a moment, they stand just looking at each other, frozen like statues. And Nicky wishes Jean Vittorio would say something, anything, or at least had stayed where he was. He drops the trunk loudly, deliberately, startling them all. Jean Vittorio lowers his head first in a jerky nod. Better than nothing, Nicky supposes. Cecilia turns away from him, turns to Nicky. I am ready, Uncle. Nicky's magic picks up the trunk as though it didn't weigh more than a feather and opens the door. This time Nicky catches it before it slams against the wall and holds it open for Cecilia to walk through so she won't see the glare he casts at her father over his shoulder. There's no satisfaction in seeing him recoil, watching the defeated slump of his shoulders as he turns and retreats into the parlor. If anything, it makes Nicky want to yell at him more. Well, they have made their choices, irrevocably so. The trunk floats through the door, and Nicky follows. On the threshold, he turns to Eugenio one last time. It feels wrong to leave him here, to leave any child with these people, but he has no grounds, no rights, no legal loopholes to exploit. Still, he will not leave him like this. If you ever need anything... I'll be fine, Eugenio interrupts him. You must sing about Chechi now. I'll be fine. He smiles, too sad and too old for his age. Don't you know? I am the Genovese heir. His father's words, and even their voices, are almost identical. But while Gian Vittorio used to say it with his chin up and his eyes shining with pride, Eugenio says it like it's a terrible burden. Perhaps it is, but it won't break him. Not this loyal, clever, brave young man. Nicky does something he hasn't done in years, decades. He puts his right hand over his heart and bows, a tribute that ought to be reserved to the head of the family. Eugenio gasps, then straightens his back and nods. Thank you, Uncle Niccolo, he whispers, a little awed and a little embarrassed. Thank you, Eugenio. Clotilda plaintively calls her son's name from the parlor. Don't forget until we meet again, Nicky says, and shuts the door. The kid is in enough trouble as it is. No need to add to that. Cecilia is waiting at the bottom of the stairs next to her trunk, staring out at the gardens with her arms wrapped around herself, like a little statue of grief. Nicky dares not touch her lest she go to pieces, whether metaphorically or literally, he can't tell. Is there some place you want to visit before we go? He asks instead. Some place you want to say goodbye to? He fully expects she'll think him mad or stupid, but there's only understanding and gratefulness in her eyes. She shakes her head, swallows hard a couple of times. Can we go now, please? Of course. The trunk floats up again, follows behind them as they head down the gravel path like a perfectly trained puppy. As long as the walk up to the house felt, the walk back seems to take no time at all. The gates swing open again, and there, just beyond the threshold, there is Joe, and Nicky feels like he can breathe again. They have been apart longer, in worse circumstances. Joe has seen everything unfold, every step they took, yet it feels like a reunion, a homecoming, like Odysseus catching the first glimpse of the coast of Ithaca. Nicky should be making introductions, but all he can do is collapse into Joe's waiting arms, gasping for breath as though he had run the whole length of Italy, as though he had swam up from the farthest depths of the sea. Now he can really breathe. You did it, Yaurahi. Joe buries his face in the crook of Nicky's neck, speaking in Italian so Cecilia can understand. You did it. You're both out. Nicky nods silently because it's not the end, only another beginning. He basks in Joe's embrace, his arms surrounding him, his warm, solid presence. Only a little longer before reluctantly stepping back. Cecilia looks away quickly, her cheeks flushing for being caught staring. But how could she not stare? Nicky won't speculate on his brother's marriage, but his family has never been particularly affectionate or demonstrative. He understands more than she thinks. Nicky lays a hand on Joe's shoulder. Cecilia, this is my husband, Yusuf Alcazani. Everybody calls me Joe. You can too, if you like. Joe holds out a hand, his smile bright and welcoming. Cecilia shakes it, replying with a, pleased to meet you, so fast all the words run together, and smiles back, tremulously, hesitantly, like she isn't sure she is allowed but can't help it. No matter. It's there, and it's a real smile. Joe is working his magic again. Nicky grabs the trunk by one handle. I'll send the trunk ahead, and then we can go. He actually has to recite the incantation that will deliver Cecilia's things, Cecilia's life, to the Milano Malpensa International Port Key Terminal. Only a few words, but the trunk disappears with a crack. I have the port key ready, Joe says, pulling a length of enchanted string out of his pocket and tying it into a circle. You have traveled by port key before, haven't you, Cecilia? She nods slowly. Not in a long time, though, she admits, eyeing the purple string apprehensively. Without thinking, Nicky lays a hand on her shoulder, as he would do with any of Joe's sisters, any of his cousins, but it startles her. Of course it does, stupid idiot that he is. He has forgotten so much about being a Genovese. He immediately pulls his hand away. It will be all right, he says, grateful that his voice sounds perfectly calm and even. We've researched it, as long as you are accompanied by a witch or a wizard. Portkeys are perfectly safe. So is sidelong apparition. Though, of course, that always presupposes the presence of a witch or a wizard. He clears his throat. You'll have to hold the string with one hand and mine with the other, or Joe's hand if you prefer. Cecilia nods solemnly, takes the string in her right hand, and holds out her left to him. Mickey takes it. Such a small hand, and so cold. Is she cold? Is the cloak not enough? Before he can ask, however, Joe pronounces the activation words, and the world whirls away. As he feels the characteristic pull behind his navel, he clutches her hand tightly, his magic reaching out and wrapping itself all around her like another cloak, or perhaps an armor. It's entirely unnecessary. He knows that. Zara went over the documentation on travel by portkey for muggles and squibs with a fine-tooth comb, and it's perfectly safe. But his magic has never listened to reason, even at the best of times, and right now he can't really disagree. They arrive in a private room at Milan Malpensa that looks more like a cozy parlor than an international portkey hub. Large, soft armchairs and couches. A table laden with hot and cold drinks and pastries. There's even an illusory fire burning away behind the grate of the decorative fireplace. Cecilia sways a little, her face pale, and Nicky quickly leads her to the closest armchair. Here, sit. Do you need to throw up? His magic is already summoning a self-vanishing basin from the shelves. Cecilia shakes her head, which immediately proves ill-advised. Nicky moves to hold her hair back as she vomits. Joe glances sympathetically at them as he casts a small spell. From his father's family, this one. It sends dozens of little green lights scattering from the tip of his wand, each heading for a different person. A very old spell, from the time before flu powder, and it cannot carry great meaning, just a little colored light like a firefly to let the recipient know all is well, or otherwise. The self-vanishing basin does its job, and so do the air-freshening charms, though Nicky always privately thinks they smell a little too much like ozone to be entirely pleasant. Cecilia lowers the newly empty basin and leans back against the chair, looking a little less pale. "Do you want something to drink?" Nicky asks her gently. "We have water or juice," Joe offers from the buffet table. "Tea? Chamomile?" "Just a glass of water, please." Cecilia glances at the basin and the shelves, clearly debating her chances of getting up. Nicky gently takes it from her hand and places it on a small table next to the armchair, close enough to be at hand, without being in the way. Joe provides the requested glass of water and helps himself to a couple of pastries, handing Nicky one filled with a thick custard cream. Cecilia sips her water, some color returning to her cheeks. After a while, she agrees to eat a couple of biscuits, but doesn't really leave her armchair. Joe keeps glancing at her out of the corner of his eye in a mix of puzzlement and concern. It takes Nicky an embarrassingly long time to figure out what's the problem. Joe's idea on how children behave is based on his own family. He expects complaints, whining, running around, and all the delightful chaos all Alkizanis bring in their wake. Cecilia has had her traveling manners drilled into her since she was a toddler. And while she had no reason to employ them much in her short life, she hasn't forgotten them. She wouldn't have been allowed to forget them. It's already a miracle she can bring herself to ask whether they're going to stay here long. Nicky smiles reassuringly, or at least hopes he does. As long as we want to. Cecilia fidgets with the hem of her cloak. But aren't portkeys scheduled? Usually, yes. They have to be activated within a certain time frame, or the enchantment vanishes. We are traveling on private, Portkisko. The arrangements are a bit different. We don't have to leave until you feel up to it, Joe says. No need to rush. Cecilia can't quite suppress a small surprised, oh, immediately followed by a blush and a quick nod. It's all they get out of her for another good half an hour, when she timidly asks if there's a toilet she could use. Nikki shows her the door to the private toilets. Private waiting rooms are expensive, but so far it has been worth every talento. Cecilia returns a few minutes later, but does not sit back down. If you want to leave, I feel so much better. Her face flushes, and she won't meet their eyes. I am ready for the next portkey. Nikki and Joe exchange a single glance. Joe looks vaguely accusing in a see-what-I-meant way, and probably also, you Genoveses, multiple exclamation points, which Nikki can't exactly blame him. Still, it's hardly the moment to go through 10,000 things wrong with the Genoveses, Nikki excluded, but not always. So Nikki smiles at Cecilia and says, I am glad you feel better. If you are sure, we'll be going as soon as Joe and I have made ourselves comfortable. Between using the toilet, thoroughly washing their hands, and eating a couple more pastries for the road, Cecilia sadly keeps declining, though. They can't be sure whether her stomach still feels a little tender, or she simply fears making them late, and so don't insist. They manage to delay their departure for another 15 minutes. Joe rings the bell that summons one of the Portkey Hub employees, a tall, plump woman who introduces herself as Angela and goes through their documents and the luggage check with them before briskly walking them through to one of the smaller private halls. It is quite different from the public hall, which is just a large, bare room with circles of chairs placed around large signs announcing the time and destination, or provenance, of the standard port keys. This type of room is used both for departures and arrivals. Therefore, designers have had free rein to make them as individual as possible. Rather luckily for them, they are in the flamingo room. As the name suggests, there are three bright pink birds painted on the walls, big enough to occupy one each. In the middle of the room, a bronze triangle spins slowly, magic holding it up without the need of a stand. Milan Malpensa has always preferred geometrical shapes reflecting the numbers of the traveling party, something to do with arithmancy and the magical expenditure involved. A paper plane appears out of thin air. Cecilia can't hold back a gasp and blushes scarlet, casting nervous glances at him and Joe as the paper plane flies towards Angela and unfolds itself into a note at the touch of her hand. Your luggage has arrived safely, and we'll be waiting for you at London International, Angela announces cheerfully before gesturing to the large clock on the opposite wall. Your portkey will activate at the chime of the clock. Each passenger must grab one side of the triangle, and one side only. We remind you the portkey will not activate without all passengers, and you will be charged for the magical expenditure and for the creation of a second one. Has everything been to your satisfaction? Joe assures her that it has. Good. Thank you for choosing us, and we hope to see you again. Please take hold of your portkey now. Cecilia swallows hard, her hand shaking as she reaches for her side of the triangle. Nikki silently offers her his hand and an encouraging smile. At least, he hopes it looks encouraging. Cecilia smiles back, though, if only for an instant, so he counts that as a win, or at least progress. Her hand still feels incredibly small, but at least now it's warm. His magic reaches out again, even stronger this time. Perhaps Cecilia feels something, because she blinks and starts to frown, but then the clock chimes and they are yanked away again, hurled across the Alps and the Channel, straight to London. This time, Cecilia seems less affected by the journey. She does wobble a bit and clutches Nikki's arm before allowing him to steer her to the closest armchair, but the self-vanishing basin remains unused, no thanks to whoever chose the decor. Joe swears that all private rooms at London International look like a pub, minus the bar part, and Nikki can't exactly disagree there. Only he is certain the designers are trying to make them look like they just stepped off the leaky cauldron. British wizards and their traditions. The refreshments are at least plentiful, although not as good as what they had back in Milan. Joe teases him for his parochial pride, but still produces a few Milanese croissants from his pocket. Cecilia accepts a cup of chamomile tea, eats two croissants, and shyly turns down a third. After a quarter of an hour, another hub employee, a man some 10 years older than Nicky and Joe, with a pleasant voice and a lilting Welsh accent, comes to retrieve the spent port key, checks their papers, and reminds them about the procedures to extend the use of the private room beyond the 2 hours they have already booked. Cecilia hides in her armchair, and when he leaves, she asks hesitantly, Do we have to stay for 2 hours? Are we waiting for another port key? If you'd rather travel by port key, we can arrange it, Nicky says. But we are not far from home now. We can easily sidelong apparate if you feel up to it. Cecilia stammers out a lot of half-words until Joe's gentle probing reveals that yes, she has traveled by sidelong apparition before, though not in the last 2 years. She doesn't remember any particular difficulties, although traveling with small children is always easier, especially for their parents. I'm fine with apparition, really, Cecilia assures them. Joe and Nicky exchange a glance and have a quiet, if quick, conversation by the table under the guise of getting more tea, after which Joe pulls Nicky into his arms and presses a fairly chaste kiss to his lips. I'll see you at home, he says as he steps away and turns to Cecilia. I'll go ahead with your luggage. You and Nicky can follow me as soon as you feel well enough to apparate. If that's okay with you, of course, Nicky adds. Cecilia stares at her hands and doesn't look up, murmuring a subdued, Whatever you think best. Another exchange of glances between them. Then Joe pats Nicky's shoulder, waves at Cecilia, and heads for the door. See you later. The door closes behind him, and Nicky is alone with his niece. His charge? His ward? Will she prefer one of those, or none at all? Will she even want to stay with them? She had asked, begged, a little girl not even 11 years old reduced to begging, and he has to push down on his magic again before teacups start turning into mice, to be sent to a Muggle orphanage. But that had to be a last resort kind of thing, right? But Muggles have boarding schools, too, and she might prefer that. Squibs don't really stay, even when they are still loved, and Nicky can't blame them. He can't help but covertly study her out of the corner of his eye, trying to imprint every detail in his memory. The exact shade of her hair, the shape of her chin, her nose, for all the world as if he were the artist and not Joe. The room has been quiet since Joe left. Perhaps too quiet. Nicky busies himself with the cups and teapots. Cecilia stares into the fake flames of the fireplace, lost in her own thoughts. She startles when he appears in her field of vision, two cups in his hands. Nicky clears his throat. More chamomile? Too late, he remembers he didn't ask her if she actually wanted any, but she forces a smile and holds out her hands, taking the proffered saucer and distractedly stirring the sugar. Nicky sits down in the armchair opposite hers, somehow managing not to spill his own cup. He clears his throat again over the clinking spoons. This must be a shocking day for you. So many abrupt changes. It must be very confusing. Silence. Not even the blink of an eye. She is the picture of Genovese composure. You must have questions if there is anything you wish to know. Cecilia mutely shakes her head. Okay, well, if you change your mind, or if there is something you want to know, you can ask me, or Joe, at any time. He keeps stirring his tea, racking his brain for something. Anything she might need to know. It's much too early, or late, to get into the matter of her education. He can't reassure her about making friends without sounding unbearably condescending. She'll see their home soon enough. Oh, right. Do you like animals? Yes? She sounds like she's trying to guess the right answer. It's okay if you are not sure. My parents didn't much care for pets, and neither did Gian Vittorio when we were little. It's just that Joe and I have a pet at home, an unusual one, that is. Cecilia leans forward, suddenly animated. Ragnetto? As soon as the name leaves her lips, all color drains from her face, and she flinches backwards, her hands flying to her mouth. Is it because something she saw in his face? But Nikki is surprised, nothing more, only surprised. Yes, Ragnetto, he says, hoping he doesn't sound as desperate as he feels. It's good you already know about him, though I guess he's not exactly an animal. Technically, he is a magical construct. Originally, he was an interfering spider, like the ones they use in curling. Chris, our rookie, got it for me as a present, and to mess with Joe. He is not a fan of insects and arachnids, but Ragnetto grew on him, a little literally. Have you ever seen a curling spider in person? Cecilia shakes her head. Well, we aren't sure how, but he got bigger. But he has stopped growing now. People find him a little off-putting at times, but he's actually very good, very friendly. Nikki internally winces. Perhaps a bit too friendly. But he won't be a problem. We'll make sure of it. Admittedly, he isn't sure how. Ragnetto is a law unto himself. They might have to send him to Zara for a while. How did you know about him? Cecilia hesitates long enough that Nikki is about to tell her it doesn't matter. She doesn't have to tell him. When suddenly she does. Eugenio. Like Quidditch, she whispers. I can't imagine. Can he still call Gian Vittorio her father when he signed away all his rights? But it feels weird to use his name now, like he wants to put distance between them. Your parents were happy about it. She shrugs, her eyes fixed on the carpet. He's not as good as you. He could never be a professional player. That's why they allowed it. She clenches her hands on her lap, her knuckles whitening. I don't think they will anymore. No, most definitely not. Hopefully it will be deemed a sufficient punishment. Is that why he thought of me? She nods. He was always curious about you. The family wouldn't tell us much. Nikki tries not to wince at the thought of little Eugenio asking about Nikki to Gian Vittorio, or worse, his parents. He knows only too well how it would have gone. But his friends at school lent him magazines and newspapers. He would have collected them, but, well, you know. Oh, but it feels like a vice clamped around his heart to think of Eugenio reading up about him in secret, while Nikki neither knew nor cared. Eugenio, whom they had to leave behind to face the music alone. His friends got him your trading card for his birthday last year, though. It made him very happy. Good. I'm glad. What else can Nikki say to that? Sending Joe ahead was a mistake. It would be so much better if he was still here. He clears his throat again, not sure what he will say when the clock strikes the hour. The bells sound almost like an explosion. Cecilia turns to look at it, biting her lip, and sags back into the armchair, small and tired. Should we go? We don't have to rush, Nikki says, levitating his untouched cup of tea back to the buffet. We have the room for another hour, and we can stay longer if you wish. Cecilia shakes her head again. No, thank you. I'm fine. Her voice breaks on the lie, though he'd bet she's not talking about her physical state. Joe is waiting for you. We should just go.
Okay, as you wish. He levitates her cup to the buffet, too, a little chamomile sloshing on the platter, and stands, helping Cecilia back into her cloak. One of the many perks of private rooms is direct access to a smaller, secluded apparition point, a pretty garden surrounded by a portico, with a large fish pond in the middle, the one feature that never changes. It's better appreciated by daylight, but at least at this time of the night, it's empty. Cecilia lingers under the arch, swallowing hard. Nikki tries to smile encouragingly. It will be okay. I know it has been a while since your last Sidelung apparition, but you don't have to worry. I'll handle everything. It's perfectly safe. She doesn't look like she believes him, though she finally steps into the garden and moves closer, taking his proffered hand. Nikki tucks her hand in the crook of his elbow and covers it with his own. Just hold on tight and take a deep breath. Are you ready? He waits for her to nod before he pictures his home in his mind as clear as a photograph. We'll go on three. One, two, three. He hears the gasp, feels her hand tighten on his arm, and then they disapparate into thin air, traveling at the speed of magic. In the blink of an eye, they stand in the entrance hallway of their home, Nikki and Joe's, and one day, he hopes, Cecilia's too. Cecilia is oddly still, staring at her feet, her hand gripping the fabric of his sleeve. But before he can ask her if she is okay, Ragnetto comes skittering into the room, almost bouncing on his eight legs, followed by an exasperated Joe. Come back here, you eight-legged menace! Down! Predictably, Ragnetto ignores him and climbs up Nikki's body, settling on his shoulder with his chirping purr, which doubles in volume when Nikki starts petting him. Hi, Netto, Nikki says. Behave. There's somebody new here. Whoa! He doesn't get to finish his sentence as Ragnetto tries to jump on Cecilia, chittering excitedly. No! Down! No climbing on new people without permission, you know that! Nikki admonishes him sternly, putting him back on the floor. Don't let the fluffy cretin scare you, sweet Cecilia. Just whack him if he gets too close. He's indestructible, Joe says, moving closer. He's taken off his shoes and cloak and rolled up his shirt sleeves. Can I take your cloak? Nikki, give me yours, too. Nikki shrugs his cloak off and passes it to him with practiced ease, while Cecilia obeys mechanically, her eyes darting over the entrance hall and all the other rooms she can glimpse before they land back on Ragnetto. Can I pet him? She asks. I'll be careful, I swear. Nikki blinks, caught completely off guard. Of course you can. Here, I'll hold him. She crouches next to him, reaching out hesitantly. Ragnetto luckily stays mostly still. He is fairly vibrating with excitement, but at least he's not trying to grab Cecilia's hand or climb over her arm. He's so soft, she whispers, awed, keeping her touch light and careful. Ragnetto chitters happily, preening as he positions himself for best scritches. Nikki can't help but smile and cast a victorious look at Joe. See, I told you it would be okay. Joe rolls his eyes, muttering something about spoiled creepy crawlies under his breath before addressing Cecilia again. How are you feeling? Are you hungry?
I am well, thank you.
Would you like to see your room? I already brought your trunk up. Cecilia freezes, much to Ragnetto's consternation, staring at Joe with wide eyes.
My room?
When she glances at Nikki, he can read too many things on her young face. None he can address right now without putting her on the spot.
Yes, your room, he says instead. Joe has been working on it since we got your letter. I haven't been allowed to see it either.
It's not strictly true. He has been either too busy or too tired to think of asking, but it's perfectly fitting she should see it first.
Or would you rather see the rest of the house first?
Cecilia keeps staring at him, both of them desperately grasping for the right answer, when Joe intervenes.
Maybe just a quick tour on the way, He steps to the side, gesturing behind him. Now, the most important room of the house is that way. That's the kitchen. Nikki will show you where everything is. It's your system, honey. The door right next to it is the second most important, the bathroom. He makes short work of Chris's old room, the living room, and the stairs to the basement, where they have a real Muggle TV and full entertainment center. We'll show you how it works tomorrow. Before leading the way upstairs, Ragnetto at their heels, he briefly explains about his studio, the bathroom that will be hers. It has a shower, but if you prefer a bathtub, we'll make arrangements and you can use the one in our ensuite in the meantime. Just let us know. The other guest room, their bedroom, and finally stops in front of the last door. Here we are. This one is all yours, he says gently, before opening the door and stepping aside, making space for them. The room still smells faintly of paint. I used color-changing paint. If pale lilac isn't your thing, just say the word, literally. There's a new chest of drawers and a bigger set of shelves now occupying the outside wall, mostly empty, but for Muggle books and toys still in their boxes. The desk under the window has been waxed and cleared of all papers and bits and ends that usually buried it. Now it holds only a lamp and a large vase full of flowers, all in extremely bright colors but unscented and, if he knows his husband, charmed against triggering any sort of allergy. The bed is the same, though the lavender flowers quilt is new, and so is the huge teddy bear sitting on it. Three balloon arrangements float around the room, proudly announcing Benvenuta and Ahlan Wasahi and Welcome, in silver, gold, and purple with gold and silver stars, respectively. Cecilia takes one step across the threshold, then another. Ragnetto follows her, rubbing against her ankles when she stops right in the middle of the floor. This one was a guest room, too, Joe explains gently. I didn't really change the furniture much. You'll want to decorate more to your taste, but for now it should be comfortable. Anything you don't like, we can change easily. Money is not an issue, Nikki adds. Professional Quidditch pays pretty well, so don't give it a second thought. Cecilia slowly spins around like a ballerina in a music box that's winding down, taking in every inch of the room. Nikki can't interpret the look on her face. She looks rapt, astounded. Next to him, Joe shifts nervously on his feet. You did all this for me? She whispers at last, staring at them both as though seeing them for the first time. Of course, Joe replies easily, like it's the most natural thing in the world. Nikki can understand Cecilia's bewilderment. He remembers what it felt like only too well. All for you, for as long as you want it. Nikki clears his throat again, carefully stepping into the room. He was not invited, he knows it, but he cannot have this conversation halfway out of the door. I know it doesn't make up for everything you lost, but you can stay here, and you can count on us. We'll take care of you, Cecilia. I hope you'll come to think of this house as your home someday. But even if you don't, you'll always have a place with us.
You mean I can stay here with you?
She looks up at him, her eyes meeting his own for the first time.
Of course. You are my niece, and my legal ward. Of course we want you here with us.
Cecilia swallows hard, takes a deep breath before she manages to ask quietly, fearfully,
forever?
Perhaps he should tell her the truth. Someday she will be the one who wants to leave. Someday she will spread her wings and fly the nest because she is strong, though she doesn't believe it yet. And even if her future will not, cannot be what their family of origin planned, it does not mean her life is over. She will find her way. But that's not what she is asking. That's not the reassurance she needs now. Besides, what he tells her is still the pure, unvarnished truth.
Forever?
and ever. Cecilia covers her mouth with her hands, her hair falling like a curtain around her face. Nikki casts a panicked glance over his shoulder at Joe. What did he say wrong? What should he do? His hands itch to pull her into a hug, but surely that's too soon. Surely she won't allow it. It will scare her. The decision is taken entirely out of his hands. With a strangled sob, Cecilia throws herself at him, wrapping her arms around his waist and holding on tightly, clinging to him, like a player caught in a gale clings to his broom. Her shoulders shake. The first tears are already falling on his shirt, and Nikki hugs her back, holds her just as tightly. No power on earth, not even the strongest magic, could ever take her from him. Behind him, the wooden floor shifts under Joe's steps. He stands at Nikki's back, his hands on his shoulders, lending him his strength and support without intruding. Cecilia weeps and weeps, a tempest of tears, a hurricane of sobs. And Nikki pets her hair and doesn't tell her to stop. Genovese, do not cry, certainly not so noisily. But the rules no longer apply. As far as Nikki is concerned, she has earned the right to cry all her tears, sob as loudly as she wants. And if later she wants to rage and scream, if she wants to break stuff, he'll take her down into the garden and cheerfully hand her all their china. Whatever happens, he and Joe will be there. The end.